What do climbing, Marcus Aurelius, and Canada have in common? It's easy. It's Tom. What Tom feels when he stands on the peak of the mountains, what he saw when he was woken up one night by a noise, and which country we would both visit again at any time, you will learn in the 10th episode of the Walkie Talkie Podcast. Enjoy. Walkie Talkie Podcast. I'm having a new guest and I'm pretty excited because this is one of the most random encounters which I met in the last months. If I remember right, it's Tom.
Yes, Tom.
And yep. We met a few minutes ago on the river.
Tom Anderson
from?
Originally born and bred in St. John, New Brunswick on the east coast of Canada, but I've been living in Canmore and Calgary for the last 8 years, back and forth between the two.
Okay.
Yeah. And so now I'm just on a climbing vacation for, you know, August, September. I'm just living out of my car camping. I have my climbing gear, my, you know, camping gear.
Yeah.
And I'm looking for adventure on the high stone, on the high peaks.
Nice.
You know, good weather, good people, good scenery. So yeah, that's the odyssey I'm on currently.
Yeah. What is the current situation, what we are doing here, how we met?
Yeah, so so here I am in the Blaeberry, a beautiful rural region north of, half hour north of Golden, British Columbia. And I'm just on the Blaeberry River, kind of in a remote place here on a rest day. My body's sore, I climbed a mountain the other day. And I'm just out here fishing. And then this fella and dog show up on the river a few hundred meters away from me, and I'm fishing. And anyway, the fellow came over and was friendly, and it turned out to be Jan. And we chatted, and here we are.
Yeah.
I'm a guest on the Walkie Talkie Podcast here in the Blaeberry.
Nice.
Yeah, it's cool. And as I speak, and I'm actually rolling a little cannabis here with a little bit of cigar tobacco.
And with a few bucks, maybe.
Yeah. So a little spliff here in the mountains.
Nice.
On a beautiful summer's evening, you know?
Yeah.
It's, a hot one today. 32 degrees.
Yeah, it's pretty hot at the moment. And to be honest, we didn't have the best view at the moment here because of all the fires around us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but fingers crossed that it's getting better next week. Hopefully rain is coming.
Yeah.
How did you end up here? What is your current situation?
Well, I mean, I'm here because the plan was to go do Mount Sir Donald in Rogers Pass.
For all the people, they...
So Mount Sir Donald is a prominent mountain that you can see from the Trans-Canada Highway.
Yeah.
And it's got incredible architecture.
Okay.
You know, the form of it is quite astounding. People refer to it as like a little... mini brother or similar to the Matterhorn in shape.
Yeah.
You know, so it has this beautiful architecture.
Because a lot of listeners from Europe,
mm-hmm.
they know the Matterhorn.
Yes.
So now they have a picture.
Indeed. So it has a Matterhorn-esque profile to it.
Yeah.
And it's a famous climb. I did the Northwest Ridge of the mountain.
Yeah.
It was first climbed in 1909. And at the time, that was quite impressive. And it's very exposed in places, very dangerous in places. If you make a mistake, slip, fall. On either side of you of this ridgeline is a 2,000-foot precipice of slabs of you will die.
Yeah.
Unquestionably if you fall off. Now, it's not particularly hard climbing, but you got to be really paying attention. You want to make sure your holds are sound as you go up. Like, is my foot on properly?
Yeah.
Is my hand secure? If my feet both come off all of a sudden, like, am I going to be able to hold myself with my hands? Like, you think about these things constantly. Yeah. But, so I climbed Sir Donald yesterday and the mission.
Alone.
Yeah. So I did it solo, which definitely added to the adventure for sure. And it was nice.
Mm.
When I, like, climbing the route, there's no one else on the climb.
Yeah.
There were some people I met on the approach trail doing other things, but on the climb, Jan, I was the only one up there.
Yeah.
It was incredible to be on this ridge that climbs for around 2,000 feet up this ridge going up the spine of the mountain. And I got to the top and it was...
What was your feeling when you stopped there, or when you
realized
where you are, what you're doing?
Yeah.
What did you felt?
I was in awe. I was in awe in the position I was in, on such an exposed radical ridgeline that showed me all these incredible views,
yeah,
left and right,
yeah,
north and south, east and west, wherever I look, I just see, you know, beautiful peaks, albeit in the smoke, it was kind of limited, but, you know, glaciers and just panoramic views that are just, that leave you in awe. Yeah. So I was impressed. There was times where I was even a little scared up there.
Yeah.
Just because there were some exposed places, like really exposed.
Is it good or bad to be scared at some point?
I think it's inevitable.
Yeah.
You know, at some point in your life.
Especially when you climb.
Oh, when you're climbing, a little bit of fear, a little bit of feeling scared is good, I guess. It keeps you alert. Mm. But too much, if it's too much to the point where, let's say, you're panicking or you're frozen because you're paralyzed with, yeah, fear. Maybe fear to that point is not good.
Yeah.
But, you know, a little healthy dose of fear, like most things in life,
yeah,
you know, not too much, not too little.
Can be good.
Can be good, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so that was yesterday. And then today is a rest day. I'm recovering my legs, my body. And I drove from Mount Sir Donald to Golden, a couple hours away. And that's where we are now, just outside of Golden. And today I spent the day driving down to the Bugaboo Provincial Park, just for the drive. And it was beautiful, hot.
Another thing, I already know now a bit about the Bugaboos.
Yeah, man.
But tell the people, what are the Bugaboos? That sounds, for me, interesting, and I think for the listeners as well.
Sure, yeah, it's a funny name. So the Bugaboos, simply put, it's just a provincial park in British Columbia.
Yeah.
So it's a provincial park. And it's a mountain park, you know, in the Purcell Mountains. And it's, they're granitic, massive granite towers that look like Patagonia.
Yeah.
With glaciers skirting their bases all around. Just incredible. And it's a magical climber's paradise up there, because granite rock, as a climber, is typically really good stone.
Yeah.
If you were to canvas climbers around the world and ask them what's their favorite rock medium to climb on, a lot would say granite.
Yeah.
Granite is just a beautiful stone. So the granite up there is phenomenal for climbing. Lots of cracks to place our hands, to put gear in. It's sound rock. It's really, you know, firm and solid. And like I say, it is such a beautiful landscape of glaciers, towering pinnacles of rock, and views that go on forever.
Nice.
And lots of people from all over the world go there. So it's a very social place too.
Yeah.
You'll go there and you'll meet.
So it's kind of also famous for climbers, I guess.
It is, yeah. In the climbing world, it is world renowned. It's known in the rock climbing world for sure.
Yeah. Sorry that I'm not a climber.
No, that's okay, Jan. That's okay, brother. No worries there.
This is part of my journey to learn.
So people will go up there, not just the rock climb, but to hike, to ski. There's an alpine hut up there. When I say hut, it's more than a hut. It's like a house structure that can house up to, I think, 30 or 40 people. There's bunk beds. There's a huge open common kitchen area, wood stove.
Nice.
You know, there's electricity, there's water, but it's still very rustic.
Yeah,
so there's a beautiful, it's called the Conrad Kane Hut, and it's administered by the Alpine Club of Canada. So that's up there as well. It's a very popular hiking destination for people.
Yeah.
It takes about 3 to 4 hours to hike to the Conrad Kane Hut. And a lot of people will just stop there, and that's their Bugaboo adventure. But for the climbers, that's just like, you know, stop number one on 10, 20 more stops, going up to these towers.
Yeah.
And climbing them is just an incredible feeling.
Yeah. Well, I can imagine. Let's go back a bit in your life, maybe, because I don't know you and I want to know you a bit better, and maybe the people as well.
Sure.
So you are getting into the climbing sport, I would say. Where are you from? How old are you at the end? And How did you came up to climbing? Is there a connection in your life or an encounter in your life which make that for you more common, or what happened?
Well, I got into climbing when I was 13 years old.
So how old are you now?
So I'm 40.
40,
which is scary.
Oh, half time, I would say.
Oh,
come on.
I'm 40, but I feel like I'm 22.
Oh, that's perfect. So first quarter.
There you go. You know, young at heart, right? But no, I'm 40 now. Where does the time go? And I started rock climbing back in New Brunswick, province in Eastern Canada. Just a friend of mine. He was in the air cadets, you know, military, army cadets, air cadets, sea cadets, you know, he's a teenager. So they were learning how to abseil or rappel down ropes, you know. And so he showed this to me one day. You know, we went to the woods, you know, we lived in a kind of a rural area, you know, with woods and little rock faces here and there. Yeah. And he said, oh, we're going to try rappelling. I was like, oh, okay, that's interesting, you know. Sure, why not? Let's try it. And we just kind of made our own harnesses, and we used, you know, military paracord from the army surplus shop. Like, everything was homemade.
Yeah.
You know, we got figure eights to rappel with, and we just started doing it ourselves, you know? And then just one thing led to another, and, you know, I got into this sport called rock climbing, you know, where you climb up a hunk of rock, and you try to do it with your own physical prowess, your own, you know, strength of your fingers, your whole body, your mind. You know, you have to read the rock. It's a big challenge, and it's really gratifying, you know, if you can do it in good style, you know. But
yeah, I had an encounter which I made also in an episode was a young guy from Germany, and he also climbed a lot, and he said it's more than sport.
Yes,
because it's psychological, very 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 interesting, and it's more like just a sport, you know, like you have to trust your climbing partner as well.
It is life and death. It is life and death. It is more than just sport. It is a camaraderie involved on the in the vertical realm.
Yeah.
Where, yes, you rely on your partner and vice versa, and that is really interesting. You know, where the bond that can be created through climbing is powerful.
Yeah.
You know, and even once that bond's made, if you don't see that person for a long time, the bond itself, though, is still cast iron.
Yeah.
So if you were to run into that person again after 30 years or 20 years, you know, the bond that you created on that amazing climb you shared together will be there. And you know, and maybe that's one of the great things with climbing. I suppose anything that's worthwhile is the memories that remain, you know, that we get to carry with us as treasure, I guess. Now, I don't know if I really addressed your question there, Jan.
No problem.
What was the question? What was the
room? It was part of the question, how you came to climbing. You already answered it. It's fine. Did you have and sometimes it's just better to say what you think instead of keeping focus on the question.
Yeah.
It's more honest.
Yes. Yeah, true. That's true.
But did you had a tell me about a crazy encounter while you was climbing, or an experience which you never forget, which still in mind if I ask this question or we talk about that?
Yeah, of course. I'm just trying to think here. Yeah, there's definitely been several. Back when I was quite young, 15 years old, it was June, and I went down to the great state of New Hampshire. For all your listeners out there, New Hampshire is the live free or die state in the United States of America. The Granite State, it's a beautiful state. Lots of good climbing there. And so we were climbing on this big cliff called Cannon. It's around 300 meters.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, I'm 15 years old. My friend, how old was he? He would have been 18 or 19. Young lads. And we went up this big climb, 1,000-foot rock climb.
15 years old.
Yeah. And no problem, because I climbed a lot. I was more than capable of doing it. But halfway up this thing, all of a sudden, it was a hot, like 25-degree, you know, late June day. Blue skies, white cumulus clouds, fluffy in the sky, just picture perfect. So it was warm the day. But halfway up the wall, halfway through the day, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, immense thunder, immense tons of lightning, rain, like you were in the shower.
Yeah.
And it came down on us halfway up the wall. And we have all kinds of metal climbing gear on. And it's coming down like cats and dogs, dude. We're soaked.
Yeah.
My friend was climbing through it, through the rain, and I was following him through the rain and lightning, and we were scared. We got to a ledge. We're like 600 feet up this wall, and we're like, what do we do?
Yeah.
I mean, gosh, we're halfway up this wall. We want to finish the climb because it was super epic. It was super incredible. You know, good movement, good rock.
What is the option?
Well, you either... So the option was, look, we either go up, we wait here, we see if the storm will pass through.
Yeah.
Or we start going down. So we waited. We were on a kind of an okay ledge. Yeah. And sure enough, the storm disintegrated. It dissolved. The sun came back out. So the storm might have lasted a half hour. Okay?
Yeah.
So the sun comes back out. Everything was drenched. The sun is just burning and drying everything up, Jan. So... like, it didn't matter that we had a downpour. It was so hot, that sun, and just so dry prior that it just dried. And we were able to finish the climb. We couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
So we finished this classic climb. We got to the top. We had a couple of victory cigars on top. And
yeah, sure.
and we lumbered our way down through the alpine tree line back down into the valley. And it was a great day. But that was, I mean, it wasn't, you know... I think any rock climber that experiences lightning, you know, that's scary.
Yeah.
You know, when you're exposed to that sort of thing. But, you know, another scary time.
Was it maybe also one of your first really, really difficult situations?
Yeah,
quite young and then...
Yeah, I would say so. I would say so. But even before that, I remember climbing back in New Brunswick at the crag, at the local cliff, and my friend... I was belaying him, holding the rope at the bottom, and he was climbing, right?
Yeah.
He grabbed a rock, this like twice the size of a human head, and held onto it for a few seconds, but couldn't hold it any longer, let it go. And it was hurtling down 60 feet towards me.
Yeah.
And I stepped about 3, 4, 5 feet to the out of the way, right?
Yeah.
Out of the line of the rock. And that rock ended up hurtling right where I was standing. It hit a tree behind where I was, and it gashed the tree. Like, it would have decapitated me if I didn't have the wherewithal to move 3, 4 feet, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was very scary. Now, I was only young. I was 14 or 15. Like, it would have happened around the same time as that Cannon Cliff thunder and lightning rainstorm that I told you about.
How do you feel talk about that now and look back?
I just look, they're fond memories of adventure, of uncertainty, of adversity and overcoming it.
Yeah.
So that's how I look at it.
Yeah.
Fond memories, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, look, those stories aren't, you know, earth shattering by any stretch of the imagination, I know. But hey, man, when you're in nature and, you know, you're at the mercy of the elements, it is real. Like, you know, and unless you've been in those situations, it's hard to appreciate it.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, it's not like I was on a, and then there was another time actually, like 20 years ago, I was in the Bugaboos, and we were so exhausted, the three of us, we were far into the park, and we were going back up a col between two mountain peaks, and there's glaciers all around, and as we were going up this col, we couldn't finish it. We were all too tired. We had to stop, set up camp, but we set up camp in an ice gully, so there was a glacier ice fall above us, and we were in the fall zone, and it was above us by maybe 500 meters or so. Stupidest thing we could have done. So we go to sleep that night. I don't know. It's like, you know, 9, 8 p.m. or whatever. In the middle of the night, I woke up, I don't know why, to this ominous cracking, booming sound. And I knew right away it was coming from above us. I could tell from just the sound. And I got woke up my two friends on either side of me. I happened to be in the middle. I said, guys, get up. There's ice coming down. We got to get out of here. And we all thought we were going to die. I was bracing for impact.
So you really thought you...
Yeah, I really...
It's not like this is the part of the story. So this is really the feeling.
This was really the feeling. So you got to understand, it's 4 in the morning.
Yeah.
It's quiet. The stars are out.
Yeah.
It's a brilliant, inky black night up in the Bugaboos, you know, incredible. I woke up for some reason to this sound. And like I bolted up, my back bolted straight up like a springboard, like really quick. And I'm like, and I hear, as I say, the cracking of the ice, the falling of the ice. And I knew it was the shit above us. Now, obviously, it didn't hit us, but in the tent, when we heard it, cascading and everything, all of us were preparing for impact. I was really prepared.
You couldn't see, really.
I couldn't see. Yeah. No, you couldn't see anything in the tent.
Yeah.
And for about 2 or 3 minutes, this almost panic gripped all of us. And we're like, holy fuck, guys, we got to get out of here now. And so we all got up at that moment, packed our shit as quickly as we could, and we got the fuck out of there. Mm. Really scary, though, because it could have come our way. It didn't come our way, but it could have. And anyway, that one springs to mind in terms of like scary moments, rock climbing, being in the mountains. You know, I could go on with more little things, but I don't want to, you know, people are falling asleep. You know, I don't.
I don't think so. Do you have some personal, maybe, a person which you, I don't know, which gives you positive or incredible impact, which you follow or which you think this is a person which thinks my way?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because some of the reasons why I'm doing the podcast is to give people a voice which nobody knows. Not nobody, but I think every random encounter has or could tell something which is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe for some people, maybe...
I think every individual has something to say.
Yeah.
Now, the art of storytelling is a craft, and some people are better at telling stories through a better vocabulary, the intonation, how their voice fluctuates, how they show expression through the tone of their voice. Do you know what I mean? Like, so some people are very animated storytellers, conversationalists, but regardless whether or not somebody has that ability to talk in a very, you know, polished way, everyone has something worthwhile to say and to share and to impart. I do agree with that, you know, because we are in a celebrity obsessed age.
Yeah.
We're obsessed with fame and popularity and money and materialism. You know what I mean? Just in a general sense, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a lot of smart people out there, people that are aware that sense that this feels phony. This feels artificial. This doesn't feel human. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, sure. Yeah.
Everything being zeros and ones and everything being like we're living in a condo in a gridded city. You know, there's almost like civilization for all it's good for, it can almost be too much. Like it's discouraging, toxic.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, but I suppose it depends on your attitude and how one's feeling.
Yeah. To come back to my question, do you have a personal role model when you were young or when you were still, or do you?
So when I mean, in terms of who I read or listen to that imparts knowledge or wisdom or humor, whatever it may be, there's definitely a whole bunch, obviously. But at university, I did major in philosophy. So Western philosophy, studying the continental and analytic traditions.
Mm.
You know, when you study philosophy, you're basically just studying the intellectual history of it. You know, you're just reading the great thinkers, you know, from, you know, obviously, you know, Socrates, Aristotle, the pre-Socratics, all these ancient Greek, you know, thinkers on up to the current era, you know. So I guess one great thinker that led me towards philosophy was Marcus Aurelius.
Yeah.
The famous emperor.
Yeah, yeah.
And Stoicism is so popular now, which is interesting. Ryan Holiday, this American author, you see these Stoic books at all the bookstores in airports, bestsellers, like the Daily Stoic. So as a philosopher, like I've been reading Marcus Aurelius for a long time, well before this trend of Stoicism came out. And the Stoics, why do people go to the Stoics? Because the Stoics, they were into lots of thinking, but one aspect of life they strove to attain was tranquility.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't want to feel disturbance in the mind or in the body.
Yeah.
How can I live a life where I'm not upset about things? So they meditated on ways to go about this. And one way to overcome anything of an ailment is to be aware of it. So they were aware of what ailed them and they wanted to overcome it. And they came together and they discussed ways that they could achieve, their word is ataraxia. Now, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that Greek properly, but ataraxia.
Yeah.
A-T-A-R-A-X-I-A, ataraxia. It means calmness of mind, yeah. Calmness of spirit.
Yeah, I will ask my Greek friends.
Ask your Greek friends, yeah. Yeah. But and Marcus Aurelius, he wrote in Greek, but he was Roman.
Yeah,
so,
true, yeah.
So he was raised a Roman, you know, Latin, but the Romans, the elite Romans of the empire, so this is 2nd century AD, were very much, if you were an elite, you learned the Greeks, you learned the classics, you learned that language. And so only the elite Romans spoke in Greek, and they would often speak in Greek, make the inferiors feel even more inferior, you know?
Yeah.
So that's interesting about Marcus Aurelius. He wrote his meditations in Greek. Now I'm reading the English translations. I only wish I could read and translate ancient Greek, you know? Oh my God. Yeah.
Learn Greek. It's...
So Marcus Aurelius was a big influence. You know, yeah. One of his sayings, one of the things he would say, again, he would use this metaphor. Don't be a puppet of the passions. Cut the strings of passion that control you like a puppet. You are your own man. Control yourself. You can have that attitude that you're supposed to have. Choose it. Choose it.
Yeah.
Be proactive in your mind.
In which age did you started reading, or did you?
Yeah. My early 20s, actually.
Yeah.
Early 20s. Yeah. Now, some of these things, you know, some philosophy, adult themes in general.
Yeah.
I don't think a teenager, a 12-year-old, a 13 or 14-year-old, they might be able to read it, but are they going to be able to understand what he's getting at? Yeah. You need to have life experience to understand some writers.
Yeah.
You know, you can't be 12. Like, even if you're a brilliant whiz kid, 12 years old, well, you haven't experienced life, romance, relationships, infidelity, crime, murder, all the hardships that adults go through. So it's like, you know, kids, you don't know shit when you're a 10, 12-year-old kid, you know?
Hopefully not that much.
Yeah. And if you do, well, I feel bad for you because you're not a child, you know? You shouldn't.
If you do, read Marcus Aurelius.
Yeah. But so Marcus Aurelius, speak one. I mean, there's so many, but who are truly the greats?
Maybe some one thing is still in your mind to, well, like you already said. I mean, it's always interesting to.
But I was always like, and I suppose this is more to the point of why I chose philosophy as something to study at university. Because I mean, what are you going to do with a philosophy degree, right? I mean, you know, well, the answer is you either go on to get further education. You know what I mean? It's just a primer. Yeah. You're just become cultured about the West. You know, you're reading history, political science, and learning how to read and write and analyze things.
Yeah.
And yeah, you study some logic, you know, so you can detect bullshit, you know. Arguments. But one of the reasons I like philosophy is I like meta thinking. Mm-hmm. Why are we doing this?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, why? Yeah. So the meta. Yeah. So metadata, meta this. Meta is a Greek word. It just means after.
Yeah.
It means after.
Oh, you know a bit Greek, right?
Well, yeah. I know some catchphrases in Greek and Latin and French and even, you know, German, Aufklärung and,
What?
Aufklärung.
Aufklärung, yeah.
Yeah. The Enlightenment, you know, but.
Very important.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah, me too.
But just that, and this is a disposition that every human being has, but very meta. Like, I remember being in high school math class, you know, calculus or whatever. It's like, well, they're saying this is the rule, but why is this the rule? Why is it like that? Like, why? Like, I want to know the proof that is like, do you know what I'm saying? Like, here's the quadratic formula or something.
Yeah.
But why is it like that? Like, they just teach it as, well, this is what it is. Well, why is it like that? Like, I want to go into the metaphysics of why we're.
Why?
You know, it's that interesting sort of inquisitive wonder. Even if you can't formulate the question with the precise language, it's felt intuitively, you know? And you can try to flesh it out through conversation, through dialogue or writing or reading. But so influences. Yeah, so an influence was just pure curiosity, right? And one big historical influence was Marcus Aurelius. A modern philosopher, I really like a guy named Richard Rorty. Famous American philosopher. He passed away in 2006. He taught out of Stanford, Virginia Tech, a few different places. world-renowned, and he wrote on theories of knowledge. That was a big topic of his. The fancy Greek word is epistemology.
Okay.
Epistemology. So basically theories of knowledge is a way to translate that.
Yeah.
And he was an interesting thinker. He really believed in the radical openness of the human condition. Nothing is settled once and for all. You know, we become comfortable with certain things, certain environments, contexts, and rules. Very quickly.
Yeah.
And then we take it for granted and we become habitualized to a certain way of going about things. And we assume that it's very solid.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, fuck, it's another weekend. You know, the stock exchange is going to run. But as soon as crisis happens, we realize how fragile things are. Truly are. So he muses on these aspects of knowledge more in a scientific sense, like more hardcore empirical science, like what is the ultimate description of the world? Is it quantum mechanics? Is it Newtonian physics? Is it, you know, string theory? All these different ways of describing the mathematics of gravity and space-time and mass and how it all interrelates. Now, the scientists say this is the ultimate description of reality, but that's not the human experience. We don't live on a quantum level. You know, we live on a human level.
Yeah.
Sure, we might know that there's
it's very human what we're doing. Yeah.
There's atoms and quarks in us, you know. But sure, it's helpful to know that, and it might have a pragmatic upshot. But in terms of, human connection, Richard Rorty, he was more interested in knowledge of ethics as opposed to knowledge of science in terms of how can we make a dam or how can we make this road. He was really concerned with the ethical aspect of human knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
How do we know? Jeez, I'm getting lost here, Jan. Folks, I'm getting lost. He's got me. But I wanted to say one thing. Look, with Richard Rorty, so the various sciences try to describe whatever domain they're in, whether it's psychology, biology, neurophysiology, cardiology, whatever it is, mining, you know. Here's a great quote by Richard Ward.
Do you see a connection between between climbing and these guys which you talked about?
I mean, you could, maybe not directly,
You can...
Look, I'm jumping all over the place here. Sorry, folks. But yesterday, you ever hear of the author Jack Kerouac?
No.
Okay. Jack Kerouac is a famous American author. He's part of the beatnik generation. So like the first hippies in America sort of were doing their thing back in the 40s and 50s before the 60s hippies. That's when when people think hippies now, they think 60s right away.
Yeah.
But there was a proto generation of hippies prior to them. And Jack Kerouac is part of that generation.
Okay.
So the 40s and 50s, he was hitchhiking across America, you know, going to parties, reading Zen Buddhism and writing and going to poetry jams in San Francisco, you know?
Yeah.
And doing drugs and cannabis. But in one of his stories, they go on a mountain climb in the Sierra Nevada of California. And they actually climb a peak called the Matterhorn. There really is a Matterhorn in California. So they climb it and he's very afraid. He's terrified. But his friend, his companion is more experienced and he's like the guide and he's ahead of him and he's laughing and singing and whistling. And he says to him, he goes, "Sal, don't worry." He says, "Don't you know you can't fall off a mountain?" As if that's supposed to make him feel better. You know, the guy was still scared. Anyway, he gets to the top of the mountain, not the scared guy, but the one who's happy. He gets to the top and he screams to his buddy below him. He goes, "Yo, Sal," he says, "when you get to the top, keep climbing." proverb there. I thought of that line. From that book. So it's from a book called The Dharma Bums. Yeah. So if any of your listeners want to read a really influential 20th century American novel that really captures the spirit of American youth in the 40s and 50s, get The Dharma Bums by Jack Kerouac. It's a wonderful, wonderful novel.
Oh, I will go for it, yeah.
And so I thought of that quote and recited it on top of Mount Sir Donald yesterday when I was on the top.
Nice.
And I actually wrote that quote into the register at the top. There's a...
Oh, really?
There's a registry on the summit of Mount Sir Donald. Yeah.
So, well...
And so I inscribed it into the...
The question makes sense now if you have a connection, you know, of all of these people which have an influence of you and...
This is the connection.
Yeah, definitely.
This is... So this was an influence too.
Yeah, nice.
For sure.
Yeah.
But I mean, so many influences, Jan, you know? So many, so many influences. I mean,
every encounter influences a bit. hopefully, maybe not hopefully, but let's go back to Greek.
Yeah, sure.
You told me that you never went to Germany, which is a shame.
I know it's a shame.
But you told me that you went to Greece, and after I had a really, really beautiful time in Greece. Let us know what you are have still in mind about Greece. Mm. How was your experience in Greece? Short story for my Greek friends.
Sure. Okay. Really quickly, very succinctly, the Greek people. So we showed up in Athens. Everyone's friendly. So the Greeks are very friendly. That's one thing I noticed. So as a Canadian, that's saying something. You know, everybody knows Canadians are known as friendly people. Greek, super friendly, very hospitable and kind.
Yeah.
So that caught my attention. The food obviously is marvelous. You know, being in the Mediterranean, close to Turkey, close to Africa, you know, it's sort of a crossroads of global foods, right? So, you know, the Greeks they got great cuisine, obviously the history, you know, ancient Athens, the Parthenon, the Acropolis. The Oracle, Delphic Oracle, everything, you know, the Peloponnese, the islands, the Aegean Sea, the turquoise waters along the coastline, you know, those translucent, you know, Caribbean looking.
It is, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
it truly is tropical looking waters, you know, just absolutely enchanting, you know, and the smell, if you go outside the cities and you're hiking along the hills, often they have wild herbs growing. Thyme and sage and whatever other herb it is. And it's just aromatic everywhere along these hillsides.
Yeah.
So I was absolutely blown away by Greece. I would recommend it to anybody. And I am just chomping at the bit to return. So that's my general...
Nice. Yeah. No, I totally agree.
Kept it simple. I stayed on point. I didn't deviate there.
I 100% agree with your feelings about about Greece.
Oh, and another thing too about Greece, which I found interesting, was you could drink a beer on the sidewalk, or like have an open beer.
Oh, that's Europe.
Okay, that's Europe. Okay, well, there we go. Like, as a Canadian from North America, you know, we're so conservative and uptight here.
Yeah, it's the other way around. If I came here and you have to hide your beer.
Yeah, you know, it's like, oh my
God. Paper bag or something.
Well, I was impressed with the liberalness of the... Yeah.
But here in the wilderness, we don't have to hide our beer, our can.
No, in the wild. That's right. That's right. Yeah. We're free here in the Rocky Mountains.
Nice. Before I say big thanks for your time and for your honest voice and your that you share all your thoughts with me, which
you're welcome.
Do you have a question about something in life?
Well, I guess a general question. Well, I'm thinking of one question that isn't related to you, and then I'm also thinking, well, maybe I should ask you a question.
Okay. Both talk about the question.
About you, Jan. What is, do you have a goal? Like maybe a long-term goal, whether it is a career, a project, a hobby, whatever it is. Do you have, what is a long-term goal that you may have? It doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah. A long-term goal is definitely to give as much people as possible on my journey through life good vibes.
Nice, man.
Good vibes, much love.
Nice.
And the feeling that you can do something for a better world or for your better life or for for something which is maybe you think before it's not possible, whatever. Mm. Maybe, yeah, I can influence a few people in a positive way. This is a goal which I already had, still have, and I will keep going, not with pressure, just because it felt good for me to do this and to share this way. But there are another goals as well. Yeah, but this is one of my goals.
Now, I revealed my age to you. How old are you?
31.
Oh, you're 31. See, I would have guessed younger.
Yeah.
I would have guessed 24, 25.
Yeah, I'm 31. I'm feeling like 20 and I'm look like...
You know what? But you're making me feel better here. You know, you're in your 30s, you know? I'm just barely 40, by the way. Barely.
Yeah.
Barely 40.
I wouldn't guess you at 40, to be honest. I was like 35 or 36, I would
guess. Hey,
here we go.
Guys, Jan just gave me a confidence boost. There we go. My new age is 35.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, 31, man. It's funny. Like, it seems like yesterday when I was 31, dude. In 2012, right?
Yeah.
Like, Jan, before you know it, bro, you're going to be 40, man. You're going to be like, holy fuck, I remember talking to Tom.
Oh, it's the same with 30.
You know, this memory, you know what I mean? Yeah, 30. Yeah, yeah. I know. Yeah.
Well, I look back now, it's like, okay, yesterday I was 25. Mm-hmm. So,
But there's a saying of mine, to age is to live. And I want to live. So part of the deal with living is aging. The only way to live is to age. It's part and parcel of living.
Definitely. And it's just a number.
It's just a number, man. Exactly.
Just a number.
What's more important is what you were saying earlier, your long-term goal is you want to extend good vibes, kindness, goodwill to people as much as you possibly can within reason, right?
Yeah.
And I agree, dude. Like, I often find myself becoming cynical or negative because of the stresses of life in general. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, which is very, very easy.
It's very easy to become bitter and angry at the world, sort of. Like, why is my life like this? Like, why aren't I doing better in this aspect of life or that aspect of life? Do you know what I mean?
Definitely.
And so that negative energy, like, I succumb to it. And it makes me feel bad. Like, I know it. Like, I know when I'm not in a, you know, in a harmonious, good-willed state of mind.
Yeah, me too, yeah.
And, man, it's a horrible thing. Like, I feel bad when people are at undergoing tension with each other, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But to be honest, there's always a way out of it.
Oh, yeah.
So I think we both can say... Because I think, I don't know you really much, but I think we both had knew the other side.
Yeah.
And just to let all the people know this, you can go out of it. So it's you're not stuck there.
That's right.
But it's up to you.
Yeah.
It's up to you at the end. So.
It's interesting. Sometimes I wonder our attitudes, emotions, etc. Like how much of it is physiological, so neurotransmitters, etc.
Yeah.
And how much of it is cognitively attitudinal in the sense of, like, you're in control of your cognition, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's interesting, you know, this nature-nurture thing, you know?
Yeah.
But I do believe the mind, though, is a powerful tool. And if you just go into sort of, what's the saying, you know, autopilot with your mind, you know, you're not controlling, it's just autopilot.
Yeah.
Well, it's easy to feel turbulence on autopilot. Mm. You know, you gotta grab the controls sometimes.
Yeah.
And when you grab, go ahead.
No, that's for me, it's a beautiful finish line. At some point, you have to go out of your autopilot and take control back.
Yeah.
So this is.
And on that ending note, that's why I'm on this journey right now, this adventure of climbing mountains and rock climbing.
Yeah.
I'm taking control.
Yeah.
And I'm flying to where I want to fly with goodwill and positive vibes.
Nice. Here we go.
Thanks very much, Jan. This has been a great pleasure.
Yeah, thank you too. It was like I said, most random encounter and most random recording out of nowhere in the woods, on the river. Thank you very much.
Very welcome. It's been a pleasure.
We wish all the people out there good vibes.
We do, yeah.
Much good, love.
Good vibes to all of Jan's listeners. And this has been a real pleasure. And yeah, Canada, guys. Canada's a good, loving country. And let's all try to be good around the world. Canada's not perfect. But yeah, we're on one globe, one country.
Yeah, at the end we are.
Yeah, one country. It's called Earth.
Yeah.
That's the real country,
that's
you know?
That's the real country. That's where we're living.
Canada's a fiction.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Take care.